smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf number 20. I'm Fred Green. Hey, Kenny, we're going to do an Ask Kenny today. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. And we had somebody scheduled today, but last minute they had to do some international travel. So hopefully we will be able to bring them back on at a later date. Don't want to say who it is because it's a big name, and if they never come back, I don't want to be held to it. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good idea, but I am excited to hopefully get them rescheduled here in the near future. But hey, there's nothing wrong with a little Ask Kenny every now and then.
No, because we continue to get questions in, and they're really good questions, and you've proven to have really good answers. Things are discombobulated. If our Skype signal isn't as strong as it usually is, it's because Kenny's working on a Windows machine instead of a Mac.
Yeah, my Mac's in the shop.
Oh, you love your new Mac, don't you?
Oh, I do. It's awesome.
That's so good. Another convert. All right, well, let's get to some questions here. It's real interesting. We've gotten, since we've been doing shows on that the Callaway iMix stuff, we're getting a lot of questions about shafts. So I wanted to get right to it, and this one comes from Rick Riego de Dios. He's in Orange Park, Florida, and he says, what is your take on the controversy of steel versus graphite shafts on irons? I read that steel has more consistent distance and less dispersion, whereas graphite seems to give greater distance, more dampering, but more dispersion. Lastly, if steel is superior, why is it being phased out of the longer clubs like hybrids, woods, and drivers?
What it boils down to on drivers, we'll touch on those first. With a 460cc club head, weight becomes the biggest issue there. And technology has changed so much over the last few years with graphite, getting almost as consistent as steel. So what you have to do is you have to find a shaft that fits you that's going to be very consistent, thus enabling you to generate more club head speed. With the driver, a graphite shaft, you're able to make the shaft a little bit longer because of the weight being lighter. And anytime you make a shaft longer, you're obviously generating more club head speed. And also, as far as torque goes, steel has always been one that has had less torque than graphite, so the dispersion rate is not as great. But with new technology and the correct graphite shaft, the differences are very small. When it comes to irons, you see the majority of the guys on the PGA Tour are using steel shaft in their irons, and the majority of that has to come with consistency. They know that they want to hit a shot a certain distance, and steel does seem to be a little bit more consistent than graphite. And what you find with your seniors and ladies typically is they tend to gravitate towards graphite shafts for a couple of different reasons, one being the shaft is lighter and the overall weight of the golf club is lighter. So they're able to generate more club head speed that way. And also the dampening factor. And what we mean by that is when you miss hit a golf ball, especially on a cold day, you can feel it a lot more. Let's say you blade an 8-iron and all of a sudden you feel this in your hands and your elbows, a really hard vibration. Well, graphite dampens that vibration where you don't feel it as much in your hands and your arms. And guys tend to be a little bit better golfer, especially the guys on the PGA Tour, when they miss a shot, graphite's not going to give them that feel that they want to be able to have to figure out what they actually did wrong. So fairway woods and hybrids, I think the same thing goes there with drivers. You're able to make that shaft a little bit longer, get a little bit lower kick in the bottom of the shaft, which helps create trajectory to get the ball airborne to where it's going to land a little bit softer. Myself, I like to use steel shaft on my fairway woods, hybrids, and irons, and I do use a graphite shaft on my driver, so it's very much personal preference.
But aren't there other factors involved? Like, I know personally, I used to have some Adams clubs that had this hybrid graphite steel shaft, and then I moved to a graphite shaft, and I'm getting not only more distance out of it, but I was also feeling less pain at the end of a round. I mean, you know, back strength and core strength and flexibility all have, and your age, have an impact on what shaft you should be using, correct?
That is correct. Now, you said you switched to graphite from steel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and typically what you're going to find is graphite versus steel when you're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. I mean, you're looking at the same exact golf club and you put a steel shaft in it versus a graphite, you're typically going to be about a half an inch longer on the graphite. So you are going to generate more club head speed and you're going to hit it farther. And then you talk about you're not as sore after a round of golf. I'm not saying that you're mishitting it a lot, Fred, and you're getting a lot of vibration on those steel shafts.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do find, though, is that you don't receive as much a response on mishits on graphite shafts as you do steel. So obviously, at the end of the round, there's going to be a difference in the way that you feel, especially if you're one that suffers from tendonitis or any ailment, arthritis in your hands or anything like that. You can definitely soften the impact with graphite shafts.
Well, we obviously don't know a lot about Rick's situation, and we'd probably have a better answer if we knew more about him specifically. So I guess if he's interested in changing clubs and wants to know more, he should contact you directly.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you if I knew about his game, if I knew that he had a rather slow swing speed, and age would dictate the answer to the question as well, or a female, let's say, for that matter. You know, all those variables tell me that I can get somebody into graphite shaft to help generate more club head speed, and then also it'd be lighter in the overall weight of the golf club.
And he's in Orange Park, Florida. You guys have stores there. He can go get
he can go right into an Edwin Watts location, and they can set him right up.
Okay, very good. You know, it's interesting because Jim Allen of Cane Ridge, Tennessee, I don't know how he knew this, but he says, often we hear about swing speed and as it relates to shaft flex. Isn't that interesting? You're just talking about it. He says, I'd like to know how the swing speed relates to loft on the driver or other woods.
Yeah, swing speed doesn't dictate launch as much as what the shaft is going to do. I mean, I've had the opportunity. We just put an About Golf simulator in our warehouse so we can do product reviews in-house for our sales staff where we can test products. So I've been on a launch monitor a lot over the last 3 or 4 days and actually just got back from a Cleveland demo day today. And it's amazing what you can do with the shaft of a driver by changing his shaft, getting a little bit stiffer tip or weaker tip, and using the same loft driver and change trajectory and spin rate. Club head speed, a shaft that has a more flexibility to it. Let's say I have a typically 110 mile an hour swing speed with a stiff shaft. If I go to a graphite regular shaft, I'm probably going to generate more club head speed. But the problem is my launch is probably going to be too high and my spin rate's going to be too high and the dispersion's going to be far greater than it would be on a shaft that actually fits my swing speed. So, but I will say that swing speed doesn't have as much to do with loft as the swing itself actually does, you know, depending on how you take the club away and how you make impact with the golf ball is going to have a lot to do with what the launch angle of the driver is.
So when Jim asks if a 8.5 degree driver with a swing speed of under 90 miles an hour, those two items don't necessarily relate to one another.
They don't. I mean, okay. From a sales standpoint, it doesn't. Those two factors don't fit each other.
Don't let any salesperson convince you that they do.
No, I mean typically. I mean. You do every now and then see somebody that has a slower swing speed but has a real high launch angle that might need to be fit in an 8.5. But even at my swing speed at 110, which is fairly high, I can't use an 8.5 degree driver. I mean, I don't launch it near high enough to be able to benefit from that. You know, I'm in a 9.5 degree driver. So 8.5 with a slow swing speed doesn't typically jive.
Okay, good. And he's in Cane Ridge, Tennessee, and you guys have stores around there too, right?
We do, so he's doing well also.
Well, and we're not just picking... Your stores are all in the Southeast. The Edwin Watts... Not your stores, but Edwin Watts Golf Stores are mainly in the Southeast. So if somebody lives in an area that is not fortunate enough, like myself, to have an Edwin Watts golf store, you can go into your local pro shop or your golf store, get fitted for clubs, or your local club maker, get fitted, and still do business with you guys over the phone or online.
Yeah, we get that all the time where somebody had, you know, got fitted for a particular product, and we can actually custom order anything from the manufacturers.
Yeah.
Our relationship with them has, you know, been going on for 40 years this year. So,
oh, congratulations.
We typically can get a custom club out the door within 24 to 48 hours.
All right. Well, then here's an example of somebody in Bridgewater, New Jersey, where there's no store. But Scott Struhl writes, another shaft question. What's the best way to try new shafts for irons? Does the club head matter much when testing to see which shaft will change his shot trajectory?
It does, but it depends. You know, if you're talking about a short iron, an 8-iron or lower, it's not going to change that much to really benefit you. And typically what you find, especially in any type of wedge sale, is the majority of those, I would say 90%+, are going to be a steel shaft, because you want something that's very consistent. It's a lot harder to test irons for shafts than it is for drivers. A lot of the major manufacturers have either OptiFit or QuickFit technology where they can swap shafts on driver heads real quick and fit you into that. With an iron, you're going to have to actually get, four different golf clubs of the same club. You might have to get graphite stiff and regular and steel stiff and regular and see which one fits you the best. But your short irons, it's not that big of a difference. Where you're going to see a difference is in an iron that you're going to hit longer, typically your 6-3 iron. And you're going to see a big difference in trajectory as well as distance if you're in the correct shaft.
And once you determine which is the correct shaft, basically on your swing speed, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Will the shaft have that much of an impact on shot trajectory?
It will, because a graphite shaft tends to have what we call a lower kick point. So that's going to actually, what that does is it speeds up the head of the golf club, which gives it a higher launch angle. The first question that we're going to ask somebody when we're trying to fit them is what is your club head speed? Or if you don't know that, what club do you typically hit from 150 yards? And let's say you tell me, Fred, that you hit an 8-iron from 150 yards. And so my first answer is going to be, okay, you're going to be in a stiff shaft. Now we need to try to find out a little bit more about your game to be able to tell whether or not you're going to need graphite or steel shaft. So swing speed does have a lot to do with flexibility of the shaft. It doesn't exactly have to do with the preference of shaft that you're going to go with.
Interesting. Okay. And you're a believer that the manufacturers do so much research on this stuff that they generally pick the shaft and put the shaft on the club head that really works best for their club head?
Yeah, when they're making a new product, let's take drivers again for an example, they tell the manufacturers, they might have 5 or 6 shaft manufacturers say, hey, here's our product. Find or make a shaft that's going to fit our product the best that you think it's going to work. And then what they'll do is they'll test all of those products. It takes a long time for them to get the testing done because they want to be sure that they have the best product in their product. So typically when you buy a product off of the shelf with a stock shaft, you're getting the shaft that performs best in that golf club. Now, it might not be the best shaft for you, but under normal testing, that is the best product that worked in their driver. Years ago, you had these crazy shaft manufacturers. They were just basically buying less expensive shafts and mass production so they could, you know, basically net down the cost of the golf club. And what they found is they can go to these manufacturers of shafts and say, hey, we're going to buy a whole bunch of these shafts and put them as a stock product in our golf clubs, so they can net the price down and be able to make it affordable for the end user.
And Scott's the kind of guy I know. I've talked to Scott before who sent this question in, and he is a better player, and he spends a tremendous amount of time practicing. Do you think that a custom club maker would be more appropriate for him to talk to, or no?
When you talk about custom club makers, what I envision here is like a component guy that has an off-brand iron head or driver head, and he's going to try to put a shaft in there that fits a person and go from there. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with those. Typically what you find is those what we call off-brand components. They're mass-produced, and they don't spend a lot of money in research and development. The major manufacturers that we do business with, that's why we call ourselves the number one reseller of Pro-Line golf equipment. So this is the products that you're going to see on the PGA Tour or LPGA. They spend so much money in research and development to make sure that they have the correct product and the best product available for the player. And what I mean by that is you and I spoke with John K. Solheim Jr., who's head of engineering at Ping, and I was rather surprised when I said, how many engineers do you actually have that work at Ping? And his answer was 47. I mean, can you imagine that? We're talking about golf clubs here. So that tells you what they try to accomplish when they're building a new product. So I'll give you an example of an X-ray or the molecular structure of a golf club on a cheap off-brand golf club versus a higher-end Pro-Line golf club. And what you find are some of these off-brands have what we call hot spots. The molecules might have settled in a certain area of the golf club, and if you hit it in that area, it might not be exactly in the center of the golf club where you're supposed to hit it. Let's say it's high and right on the toe. If you hit it in that spot, you get an amazing response. Whereas on a very high-end golf club, there's no hot spot in that golf club. The molecular structure of the golf club is a lot more sound, so off-center hits, even though they might not be in the sweet spot, your lack of yardage loss and off-center shot dispersion is very minimal at best. I mean, they did a show on Discovery Channel one time with, I believe it's called How They Are Made, and it was actually focusing on Ping out in Phoenix, and they were showing how they made iron heads for their G10 line. So once they showed how the product was made, they actually stuck it on an iron Byron machine, and they hit several shots with it right on the sweet spot and the same club head speed every time. And then what they simply did is they took the same club head speed, and they basically moved the ball half an inch off of center. Okay, now that's where the majority of us are going to hit the golf ball. We're not going to hit it on the sweet spot every time. We're going to be within a half an inch of that sweet spot of the golf club. And there was only 5 yards distance loss and I think 3 yards off center. So that, to me, that's incredible. That's a huge advantage. And are you going to get that from a component golf club? Chances are very slim to none that you're going to get that.
Well, this week on the Golf Smarter podcast, we do have a custom club maker on, and there's one thing about him that I thought was really interesting is that it's like having your own hair cutter. I mean, you have a relationship with somebody who wants to know as much about your game as possible and make sure that, you know, every element works for you. And he'll even, you know, the guy that I was talking to, Michael Clark, it's like you bring your clubs in and he'll make sure that the lie angle is correct on everyone and you're hitting each one properly, and we'll tweak that for you.
Yeah, a custom club maker obviously knows a fair amount about making the product, how the product works, and how to fit you for the correct product. I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing by any stretch of the imagination. The only thing I'm saying is, are the products as good as what you're going to get from a higher-end manufacturer?
Right, right.
And what I've found is that it's not. Now, then again, if I had that manufacturer come in here, they might be able to show me some data that that contradicts that. But, you know, it really comes down to feasibility. You're going to be able to buy some component golf clubs from club makers out there and fitters that are going to be rather expensive, and they're going to make a great product. The thing is, a store-bought iron set off the shelf from one of the major manufacturers, you can rest assured that product has had its due diligence done on it, and they know that it's going to perform to their standards.
Yeah, they have millions of dollars invested in this versus a club maker who can barely keep a shop open sometimes.
Yeah, there you go.
Earlier you referred to having John K. Solheim on the Golf Better podcast. And if you're new to Golf Better podcast and haven't heard past episodes, not only was John K. Solheim, who's Vice President of Engineering for Ping, he was on episodes 4 and 5. Fascinating conversation about hybrids. But episodes, I always like to talk about episodes 2 and 3 were the ones that we talked about putters and putter technology and putting with Frank Thomas and Scotty Cameron. So if you're new to the program, please, we invite you to go back and listen to all the episodes of the Golf Better podcast. And you can learn a tremendous amount about equipment and the equipment technology from the people who are responsible for making this gear.
Yeah, it's been extremely educational for me as well, talking to these guys.
And
we love to talk to the engineers that design them, that make them, that know the minute details that go into making these products. And I can tell you they spare no expense when they're coming out with a new product.
And not a slam to anybody personally, but sometimes the manufacturers that you're speaking with want to bring on their marketing people, and we say, no, that's okay. We'd rather have the technical people and the engineers, because the marketing people, we know what they're going to say, and that's not what we want to talk about.
Right. I mean, we've always been about it being educational here and not the hard sell, just trying to give an honest opinion on what the products are that we test and that we see coming to the marketplace, and being able to pick the brains of these engineers. There's some great stories in there. Every one of them is a great listen to. If you haven't heard them, I would advise you to listen to them. They're wonderful. And we got some great guests coming up that we're very excited about as well.
Yeah, and I will claim to be guilty for the fact that we do hard sell on our podcast more so than we do on selling equipment.
You do. You can tell.
Yeah, it's true. Here's an interesting question that came from James Rosca, who's in the Philippines. And he says, what is the main difference between a cavity back iron and the blade irons? He says that he tried the Mizuno MP67 last week and was amazed that he was able to hit it. He currently uses a Cleveland TA7 irons. When do you really know that you can use a blade iron, or is it just that the Mizuno irons are forgiving?
Yeah, I mean, typically what you find, some people, and now this is a very small number, but there are some people out there that are higher handicaps that can actually hit a blade-type golf club better than they can a cavity back. One of those perfect examples there is my internet director, Nick Kuritz. He's a higher handicap golfer. I say mid to high handicap, but he can hit a blade better than he can a cavity back. The difference between the two, on a blade or muscle back iron, you're going to have very little offset. The long iron's going to look like a butter knife to you for the most part. So the intimidation factor is going to be there when you're looking down at it. And what you find in a cavity back golf club is usually a 360-degree perimeter weighting. So what that means is there's basically a ring around the back of the golf club. You can envision that however you want. But what they've done is they've dispensed the weight where it's supposed to be, which is typically low and out towards the heel and the toe. So what they have done is they've created a more stable golf club with a higher moment of inertia. So if you hit it off center, you're not getting as much twisting as you're going to on, say, a blade or a muscle back iron. And being able to get that center of gravity down in the golf club where it's supposed to be, it's going to help create a higher launch angle, which is going to get you to be able to stop that 5 or 6 iron on the green like you want to, instead of it running all the way through the green. And having a little bit of offset is also going to help get your hands in front of the ball, which will increase that launch angle. Where a blade or a muscle back has very little to no offset, what you find typically is somebody's going to hit the mid to long irons extremely low because they're not getting their hands in front of the ball like they're supposed to. And then if you hit it off center, there's obviously going to be more twisting. Now, that being said, he said on the Mizuno MP67, he was surprised that he hit it well. We have found over the last several years that these forged and muscle back irons are getting much more forgiving in playability. And if you're that type of golfer where you're a mid to low handicap and you're questioning whether or not I can actually go with that iron, I would advise you to go out there and hit some. There are some manufacturers out there that make some that are very, very forgiving, and the feel on them is phenomenal.
If you don't mind, James, who, like I said, lives in the Philippines, he wanted me to ask you another question. And he went into, he was visiting Florida, and he went into an Edwin Watts golf store and asked about the Golf Smarter, Golf Better listener discount. And they didn't know what he was talking about. And that happens sometimes, right? Not the store, all employees don't always know about the discounts that we offer.
Yeah, we try to get that out in marketing to where everybody knows about the discount. Obviously, there's a turnover in retail with employees, and some of the newer employees might not have heard about it. If that ever does happen, all they need to do is simply have them contact me here at the home office, and I can explain that to them. But we typically try to get the word out to them fairly regular, reminding them of the discounts that we do offer for the show, as well as other promotions that we're running at any given time.
And while we're talking about it, let me just remind everybody that as a listener to Golf Smarter or Golf Better, you receive a 10% discount and free shipping when you make your purchases at Edwin Watts Golf. Now, there are some limited restrictions because they're put on by the manufacturers, but if you want more information on how to receive your discounts and get the free shipping, when you go to golfbetterpodcast.com, click on a line that's underlined there. It says, click here for more info, and it'll give you all the information you need to know, including the code that you need to enter, and that will be changed in June. We want to change it every couple months, and we've been holding this one for about 3 months now, but in June we'll be changing that code, but right now it's GSMART1, and you'll get all the information you need. But again, as a listener, you should get your 10% discount on most everything that you can order, except for some clubs. All right, let's move on to another question. I'll be surprised if you have an answer for this, because I don't know if you have any experience with this one, but it comes from Richard, who lives in Japan. I think he works at an English school there. And he says, I practice at a lake driving range that uses floating golf balls. Have you ever hit floating golf balls?
I have, yeah, and they don't feel the same to me.
Well, he said that his friend told him that the ball flight is very different from a conventional golf ball, so he may not be getting the same ball flight that he would on a golf course using regular balls. His friend said that he might make incorrect assumptions and weird corrections based on the ball flight at the lake range. Is this true, and to what degree does it change the ball flight?
I mean, you'd have to really put it on a machine to see what the difference is. But whenever you're out there hitting those type golf balls, especially at driving range, they use what they call limited flight golf balls. So you're obviously getting a different response than you're going to at the golf course. What I find is the type of person that's going to hit lake balls is basically going out there to create what I call muscle memory. Some might say it doesn't exist, but to just try to get that swing going, work on a couple things you might be wanting to work on and not concentrate so much on what the actual golf ball is doing, although it's going to fly in the general direction that it's supposed to go to, but trajectory is going to be a little bit different because of the way the ball spins and the products that they use within those golf balls to be able to make them float. So there is definitely a difference, but it's the same thing at your average municipal golf course where they're using limited flight golf balls. You know, you're not getting the exact same response that you're going to with, let's say, a Titleist Pro V1 or another higher-end brand golf ball.
So it's not just these lake golf balls, but every driving range has a different kind of golf ball. You're not going to get the same reaction to a new sleeve that you open up when you go out and play, right?
Yeah, not exactly. I mean, it's going to be fairly close, but you're not going to get the exact type shot dispersion that you're going to get with a normal golf ball that you play with every day. I mean, that's why we buy golf balls that we like.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, if that's the case, are you going to take a range ball out and play around the golf with it? The chances are that you're probably not going to do that. Hmm. It's not going to perform as well as the golf balls that you normally use.
And they out in Florida, is that where you've hit floating golf balls in Florida?
Yeah, it was in South Florida.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was in South Florida. It's not extremely popular, and it has to do with real estate, obviously.
But, yeah.
It's definitely a little bit different. That's why when you go to the practice green to practice, you're not taking range balls over there to chip and putt. You typically do that with the golf ball that you're going to be using.
Right.
And that's where I find it most beneficial, because you want to know how that golf ball is going to perform. If you're using a golf ball that you're not going to use on the golf course, and let's say you're chipping the ball and you know exactly how you're doing it with that golf ball, it's not going to be the same as it is on the golf course with your normal golf ball. So typically that's why you find everybody on the putting green and chipping, they're using their own golf ball.
Hmm. All right. Now here's a different question that I don't know if you could, because this isn't your level of expertise, but you always seem to have an interesting approach to these things. This is from Australia. This is Grant Maskard from Preston's Australia. And he said that he has improved his ball striking recently, but has really struggled to get it under 100 meters out of the green. And, you know, 100 meters, yards, wherever we are. But when he's at 100 yards and in, 100 meters and in, he's pretty bad at judging how hard to hit a ball. Now, is that just something for practice that would help improve it, or just going out and hitting heaps of shots, as he says, or do you have any drills that might suggest a way to help playing at 100 yards and in?
Yeah, I mean, I do have an opinion on that. Basically, sure. What I would do is I would find the golf club that you can hit that yardage. I mean, that's where the majority of your strokes are lost during around the golf are going to be, what I say, from 100 yards in, because usually they're going to be finesse shots. If you know that you hit your sand wedge 85 yards, let's say, on a par 5 when you're laying up, you want to lay up to that 85-yard mark. You don't want to lay up to 100 if you're struggling with that. So what he needs to do is find a golf club that he can hit smooth 100 meters or 100 yards and play to your strength, play to that yardage. If it's 110 on a smooth pitching wedge for you, then try to play to the 110 and not the 100. But you're going to find the answer at the driving range for that, or out on the golf course, hit 3 or 4 balls from 100 yards, fix your divot, but find out what club you hit smooth at that distance and go from there.
We have talked so much about the high MOI aspect of drivers and fairway woods and the hybrids and how much distance and more accuracy that you can get with those clubs. And with that development and progress in technology, are you finding that more now than 10, 15 years ago, people are carrying more wedges in their bag and less of the long hitting clubs?
Yeah, I mean, I carry 4 wedges.
I mean, yeah, as do I. Like
a, you know, pitching wedge, gap wedge, sand wedge, and lob wedge, because that's where you lose most of your shots. And what I hate to do is be at that 85-yard mark and try to smooth a sand wedge in there, because typically what you find when you swing smooth sometimes is the ball jumps off the club face and goes farther than you normally hit it when you're swinging hard. So, I like to hit a lob wedge from that distance. And with the advantage of having hybrids now, you know, if you get the right loft hybrid, you can replace 2 long irons. Just by choking down, let's say you're replacing your 3-iron with a hybrid, if you choke down, you know, 1/2 inch or 1 inch on the same golf club, you're going to hit it the same distance as the 4-iron. So what you've done is you've taken 2 clubs out and put 1 club in, so you have room for 1 more. And I think people started to realize the advantage of having 3 or 4 wedges. They're able to create more shots and hit the green a lot more than they are with little finesse shots.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. I'm going to move on to what looks like our last question here today, which actually we got a lot of stuff taken care of. And this is in regards to GPS. And I might mention before I ask this last question that our drawing for a Golf Logix GPS by Garmin, stay tuned because we have something we're going to change about that drawing. So anyway, about this question, this came from Andy Bryan in Evanston, Illinois. And he said, after listening to you and Fred discuss the various GPS devices, I started doing some research on my own. I discovered that SonoCaddy, which shows the layout of the hole similar to looking at a yardage book, and in addition, it shows where each of your shots started and landed, enabling one to keep track of stats such as fairways, hits, and greens in regulation. It will then add up your score and do statistical analysis of your round. I think that Golf Logix may be doing something similar to that in the future, but would like to know which, if any, GPS devices have similar options. There's so many options on GPS now. This might make a good show just comparing and contrasting different GPS systems.
Yeah, there's so many GPS systems coming to market now.
Yeah.
The only one that I can really compare that one to right now is one that we're carrying on our internet site called Uplay, and it actually does a flyover of the hole, so you can actually view a flyover. So it shows you a whole view of the golf hole. Where it's really beneficial is if you've never played a golf course before.
Absolutely.
You can actually see the layout.
No, wait a minute. Is this flyover similar to what you're looking at in a yardage book type of thing, or is it like utilizing Google Earth and giving you satellite imagery?
Yeah, it's utilizing Google Earth and giving you satellite imagery, but it still is similar to what you see on the PGA Tour when they do a flyover with a helicopter and then they pull away from the green to get a nice view of it. It's really nice. That's the only one that I can compare what he's talking about to. And Bushnell, who's always been big in the laser side of the rangefinders, they're coming out with a new GPS unit as well. that'll be out later this month, and it's going to be in the $199 range, price-wise, with, I think, a $29 annual fee. But what that's done is it's brought the GPS affordability into a lot of people's bag. We're at the $350, $400 range. It's a pricey item, but one that I think is very beneficial. One, it speeds up play. Two, other people might want to play with you that didn't want to play with you before because you got this cool little gadget, and it helps them with their round of golf. You know, that being said, there's going to be a lot of new GPS products coming out, and it's not going to surprise me with some of the stuff that they're coming out with.
Awesome. Oh, I love that toy. I think it's such a beneficial product to keep in your bag when you're playing. I just love having it. Well, we're currently giving away a Garmin Golf Logix GPS system. And because we had a little problem loading up this past episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, we've decided that we're going to extend the opportunity to our listeners to register to win the Golf Logix GPS. And now your deadline for entry is going to be May 20th, 2008. So to enter, please go to golfsmarter.com and click on the word contest. Again, it's golfsmarter.com. Click on that word contest and select the item that you would like to register to win for. And you can come back as many times as you'd like to register for different items. And fill out the information and click submit and make sure that you are registered, because we will announce the winner on the show that's going to be held on the 29th. Now, there's a large difference between the 20th and the 29th, only because I'm going to be on vacation. And so we got to get this show recorded a little bit earlier than we usually do. Uh-oh, we revealed, don't look behind the curtain, Mr. Wizard. Anyway, so that's the information. Again, register to win Golf Logix by Garmin, and deadline for entry, May 20th, 2008, at golfsmarter.com. Kenny, this has been fun. I'm glad that we always have a fallback plan, that we have so many questions that come in. If our guest doesn't show up, that we can do this. Thank you.
I enjoy doing it, Fred.
Yeah, I know you do. I think it's fun for you. I know that you like to learn so much from these engineers, but I think that you really enjoy it.
And it's not just this, because I like to hear myself talk. I do enjoy
You like to hear me talk.
I do enjoy, you know, talking to the engineers, but then I'm just kind of a question guy, so...
Well, and we ask you, as always, to please go to iTunes if that's where you find the program, whether it's iTunes or the Zune Marketplace or any number of podcast aggregator websites, but those are the main ones. I think people find it in iTunes. Write a review for the Golf Better podcast and let other people know what you think of the show, because when they're searching around, it's not always easy to find a good podcast. And so if you found something you like, let other people know. It'll make their search a whole lot easier. And we appreciate the kind words that you have put in. As a matter of fact, I talked to one listener the other day, and he said that he wrote a review a long time ago, and it's not there anymore. So he wrote another one. Thank you, Will.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate all of those.
Yeah, we really appreciate the feedback. It, you know, it's good for Kenny's ego. You know, he doesn't get the kind of strokes that he needs at work. So you really make it.
Again, don't forget to get your new Father's Day catalog if you don't already receive it, because there's a cute picture of two little girls on there with some guy.
And he's not saying it cute girl, little girls, because it's his kids.
My kids, yeah.
Yeah, that's why he's saying it. And also, you should get a couple copies of the new Edwin Watts Father's Day catalog, because you should leave them in strategic places around the house with the proper page open up for things that you want. Leave the hints that you need, but lots of catalogs. A good thing to keep around the house this time of year, right?
Absolutely.
And, of course, if you have a question for Kenny Nicholson that you'd like answered on this podcast, we encourage you to go to golfsmarter.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. And as we have opportunities to do shows, we will include it in the show. And if we have an opportunity to ask one of the engineers that comes on the show, we'll definitely use that too. So please submit your questions to golfsmarter.com. Click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf.